This is KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. Everyone needs a safe, decent, and stable place to live. For some of the most vulnerable people in America, people suffering from mental illness, chronic health conditions, trauma, addiction, or just the plain bad luck of circumstance, a simple transitional space gives them a chance to breathe and regroup. The Community Build Project are a dedicated group of volunteers who have targeted a dozen 8-foot by 12-foot wooden structures called wooden tents or tiny houses for Christmas Day as a completion date. Currently, the project is collaborating with the City of Port Townsend, Jefferson County, and the Port to explore viable options in the future for this transitional housing alternative. At the December County Commissioners meeting, an ordinance was approved to allow temporary homeless encampments on religious and public land, as well as an ordinance that imposes a sales and use tax for affordable and supportive housing. The ordinance sets the rate at 0.1% on taxable events. All the buildings are now on the new site, which is property owned by Community United Methodist Church in Port Hadlock. The village is called Peter's Place. Today, we speak with 7 key players in the project as they recount the evolution of, reasons for, this valuable resource. And now, let's go inside the compass. If you're driving down Chimicum Road and you pass the turnoff to United Methodist Church in Port Hadlock, you just might see a flurry of activity in the large field on the church's property. There's a huge white canopy that covers a unique construction project. Tiny houses, warm shelters for the homeless, are being born right there, thanks to a bevy of volunteers who offer important ingredients for a dynamic recipe. Space, coordination, logistics, craftsmanship, and passion. Joining me on Compass today are members of the Community Build Project team.
Jesse Thomas with the Community Build Project.
Gary Keister, Bayside Housing, supportive of the Community Build Project.
Peter Bonian, Community Build Project.
Judith Alexander, I'm a clinical social worker in Port Townsend, but have been active with the Community Build Project from close to the beginning.
Scott Rosecrans, pastor, Community United Methodist Church in Port Hadlock.
Randy Welly, Blue Heron Construction and Community Build Project.
Todd Armstrong, retired contractor from Seattle, managing the Community Build Project.
Let's go back in time and get a snapshot of the movement, for want of a better description. How it all began, how it all manifested itself here in Jefferson County, and what's behind the Community Build Project?
The seeds were planted a few years ago. Gary at Bayside has been trying to develop the idea of the tiny house village. And over the years, we've been paying attention, but really not understanding the opportunity that was available. I think just recently, we kind of really got our head around it, that this was a good idea. So we took this template from the Low Income Housing Institute in Seattle. They have villages all over the Puget Sound. And we took that model and transferred it here to Jefferson County and just started working on it. And the reason we started was because we felt like there was a need for it this year because of COVID and evictions. And I mean, if you put the factors together, it's a time of crisis for housing and especially for the homeless population, which is expected to grow. So initially I got together with Peter and we came up with a plan, and then Judy got on board and soon Randy. And we had these team build sessions where people would come and build a unit. And we kept getting more and more volunteers, more and more donations, and the thing just kind of took off. And we had an original build it and they will come philosophy because we didn't know what the acceptance was going to be in the community and with the city or the county. But I just have to say, like, the support that we've been getting and the cooperation that we've been getting has been monumental.
We figured if we built these shelters, people could be in isolation. Were they exposed to COVID or were they wanted to stay not exposed to COVID? as opposed to the shelter situation where people are pretty close proximity. And we just thought it was a good idea to be able to build places for people to be safe, be warm, lockable doors.
I would add to that, it gives these guests some dignity to move on in their lives. We've seen it so often at Bayside where someone comes in from out of the cold, they were living on the beach or living in the woods. And within a relatively short period of time, we were able to kind of give them new spirit and they moved on. Many became productive citizens and have jobs that are working and are healthy. As Judy mentioned, these are a lot better than tents. They're waterproof and they're safe and lockable, where, you know, out in the woods, you know, they're oftentimes assaulted and problems just become so overwhelming that a lot of them just drop out of society. So as Jesse well put it, it's truly a community effort. All of these volunteers that they've been able to muster, along with vendors in our community, Carl's and Arrow and Fredrickson's, who've donated significant amount of goods to us for this project. It's a real example of what we can do as a community when we come together.
Affordable housing is something that's been, I think, very near and dear to Community United Methodist Church for decades. The church has been on this location in Port Hadlock since 1959. And between 2000 and 2002, some forward-thinking members of the church wanted to provide some sort of affordable housing for seniors. So they partnered with OLECAP and then leased the south 7 acres of our property to OLECAP to build the South 7 Senior Complex. And it was supposed to be in three phases. What you see there now is phase one. And for whatever reason, they never got to phase two. I've been there for 4.5 years. So we've had discussions with OLECAP and Habitat about building something else out there. But the big stumbling block is not having a sewer or appropriate septic. So we've been wanting to see something out there for a long time, because there's not a week that goes by that a homeless person or a homeless challenged person doesn't come by my church. I talked to two today that came by the church for help. So, you know, I expressed, you know, my desire to a couple of people about wanting our property used. And the next thing I know, I get a phone call from Peter Bonion on a Monday morning saying, I hear your church has got property. We can put tiny homes on. I said, well, yes and no. Yes, we have the property, but you got to run it by OLECAP. And then we had some discussions. OLECAP got involved. Bayside got involved. Community Build Project got involved. And now I have a huge circus tent across the street. They're building these things like crazy. People are driving by, looking, stopping, asking questions. My church is very, very excited about it. I've got nothing but positive comments from my church members. So we're just thrilled to death that our property is not going to waste. We're just happy we were asked to the dance.
Just the very fact that people come by and ask questions is planting seeds right there, isn't it?
We not only have people stop by with questions, we have people stop by and say, I would like to donate however much money it costs to build one of those. People have literally stopped by, walked onto the site in Port Townsend and said, how much does it cost to build one of those? And we go, I'm not sure, but maybe $3,000, $4,000. I'd like to pay for one of those. And Gary's been receiving donations. I don't know what your experience has been, Gary, but I've been involved in service work in Port Townsend for a long time, and I'm just shocked at the level of goodwill, receptivity, and interest in participating in this. It's been uncanny. People are really curious, and part of it is Jesse's brainy idea of painting them all wild, beautiful colors. It's like people are attracted to the buildings.
The first weekend of building, and then the subsequent week, in which there was follow-up work being done, I had three people come up to me and hand me cash. And I wasn't going to say no, but I didn't really know how to deal with it. I took the cash, and then I subsequently made deposits to Bayside using my debit card in the name of the people who had given me cash. And the whole project has been so energizing for those of us who were working in it, as well as the neighborhood and the entire community.
It's been fun just listening to the conversation so far, because it's only been since late September, I think, that we've been doing this, but it has definitely evolved. When we started this, we started with Randy's Blue Heron Construction team building one, and my community garden members building another one. Heron Scott, who is the director of the School of Woodworking, is in my community garden, and he said he would lead our build. Randy was on another part of the field, you know, 40 feet, 50 feet away. And our first approach was to put groups of people that were already affiliated with each other on a build project. And doing it that way, we built 5 shelters in about 2 months. And then Peter left for Hawaii and Todd Armstrong came on as the project manager. And we shifted our process to production mode. Malcolm Dorn drove the tent from California to Port Townsend and delivered it to the church parking lot on a Sunday night. And we went into production mode 2 days later. And Todd, as the project manager now, is managing 50 things at the same time. So instead of having affiliated people and teams building a single shelter, we built 4 shelters in, was it a week, Todd, or something like that? It was crazy. Professionals like yourself really working fast.
It was extraordinary. It has been extraordinary. Just the participation, the people interested and bringing their skills. And yeah, Randy, me and Dave specifically, qualified contractors. We've had a flurry of people participating and it's just been extraordinarily wonderful.
One of the practical considerations that you've already overcome have been what kind of an umbrella you're going to be working under, which would be Bayside Housing, yes?
Community Build is delivering the village with the sponsorship of Bayside, and Bayside will be managing the village.
This is just a great effort by the community, but it's just the start. A lot of people criticize tiny houses as not the solution, and they're not, because we're all hoping to have permanent housing for our citizens. None of us want to live in a community where there's homeless people. But we've got to go down 2 tracks. One track is the tiny house, transitional type housing, and the other is permanent housing. And we have to come together as a community, as the city, the county, the citizens, the clubs, the churches, all of us have to come together to solve this problem. We had somewhat of an epidemic before the pandemic came in housing. At Bayside, we had about 45 people on our wait list. Today, we have close to 160. All of those people are, quote, homeless in some fashion. So we've got a lot of work to do yet, but this is a start. It's a positive start, and it really showed us how much this community can do by coming together. It's a nationwide problem in the richest nation in the world. So we can get it done. And this is how we start, one step at a time.
Randy, I was going to ask you a question about how you originally got involved with this.
Well, as a builder with Blue Heron Construction, I have been aware of a housing problem and affordability of housing for people moving into our community. And when Peter Bunyan approached me about leading a couple of teams on building some of the first ones, I was like, yes, for sure. You know, I've also been volunteering at the food bank and giving out food to homeless people. And I ask them what their needs are. And we at the food bank have been giving out tents and sleeping bags. And there's a lot of people that I am in contact with that are needing shelter.
I'm going to be a little vulnerable here because a number of years ago, I spent about 6 months living in my car. I didn't have enough money to go rent another place to live. The one thing I do remember is that you can make sort of a safe haven out of just about anything, including the back seat of a car and a transistor radio. And I remember one morning, and you know, you'd have to kind of search around for a place to park. At least I was sleeping in the back seat of a car. I wasn't sleeping in the bushes like some people were. I remember there was this big white van that was parked right next to me, and I heard the sliding door of the van open up, slide back and click, and I heard these high heels walking around the back of the van to the driver's side to get in. And you knew that it was somebody that had a regular workday that didn't have a place to live. And that van was her place to live. So when you think about the tiny houses and the whole idea of what a beautiful transition they can be for people, it's priceless to anybody that is in that circumstance.
Amen.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that, Christopher. Yeah, it's really an upgrade from living in your car.
Like I said earlier, you know, for 4.5 years now out at the church, the tri-area is grossly underserved. And there's so many people that are living in the woods around the church. And every week, somebody comes by to tell me about their situation. They're living in a camper trailer with no utilities. a steady stream of people living in really marginal situations are just looking for a place to stay.
In the foreseeable future, we're going to need this tiny house village, and we're going to need more. People are going to be left in between the cracks, and they're not going to have a safe place to go.
We started out being worried about NIMBYism, and our experience has been completely different than that. There was a little bit in the immediate neighborhood of concerns about whether those tiny houses built along San Juan were going to stay there. But when we found out mid-project that Scott was welcoming all of them out to the Methodist Church in Hadlock, it's been nothing but kind of green lights, even including, finally, the involvement of the county and the health department and all the various people we've had to kind of cross the T's and dot the I's with. They've been very supportive.
Yeah, and we should also give a shout out to the Evangelical Bible Church for hosting the first half of the community build. But Peter was an essential part of that, getting acceptance and buy-in with the community. And it really started with the churches and went from there.
Not only the Evangelical Bible Church, but the Unitarians built one of those. And then Scott stepped up and said, bring them down, you know, bring them down to Hadlock. So I think the faith community is the entry point with us for all of this. You know, I know that as a mental health counselor, a lot of mental health issues and addiction, drug issues start with homelessness, start with not being safe. And I think, you know, the people in their own warm houses that don't necessarily understand this can sit there and feel judgmental of drug addicts or people that have mental health issues. But try being without a house. See what would happen to you if you, for long term, had no place to feel safe. It's awesome. It's just unbelievable to think about that.
And it's a slow process, too, where your self-esteem starts to degrade, and there's just a lot of things happen over a period of time where you're not someplace secure.
But we're pretty resilient as human beings, too. Once we get that lift up, we see people can change in literally days. We had a woman that we brought in from the fairgrounds who was in horrible condition. And within just a couple of weeks, she just changed completely. You wouldn't have known it was the same person. Lehi, when they started their tiny house project, their objective was to get folks from under the viaducts. And there were hundreds of them in Seattle. And they had these huge builds down at Safeco Field where they built 100, 150 of these tiny houses in a weekend and started bringing these people in, the tiny houses. And the stories they relate to me, within 90 days or so, of course, this was pre-COVID, so there were a lot of jobs. But these people were, you know, once they had a place to hang their hat, they had jobs, and within 90, 120 days, where they had apartments and permanent housing. So it was a huge success. And we feel very confident that as we bring people in and cycle them through, we'll see a huge change in their way of life.
Along came Todd. He's the Henry Ford of the tiny house assembly line.
Let's get it going here. Exactly that. Well, yeah, Chris, I have a friend, Lori, who has worked with Gary and lives here in Chimicum. And when Peter was going to go away, Gary reached out to her to ask her if she wanted to step in and project manage. And she said, not me, but maybe my friend Todd. And this model is proving to be truly, you know, one that will provide what Gary just referenced, you know, that little bit of leg up that gives people a place to hang their hat and a place to get their personal dignity and order back together again and feel in a safe, warm place. I think this is really a powerful model.
I want to see this project expand out in multiple directions that would also incorporate Randy and Todd being able to teach young people how to build houses as we create either shelters or we create a chance for young people who want to live here to have the building skills to build their own tiny home. And if we could make tiny house villages legal with the ordinances, they could probably afford the land if they could group tiny houses together. And we're going to lose our whole young population if we don't figure out the cost of housing, critical issues that our community is facing right now. And I don't want to live in a Carmel. I don't want to live in a geriatric community with just people that can afford wealthy houses because they had trust funds or something. It's like, I want that diversity of age, but we need to support our local economy, and we need houses, and we need more people willing to build houses so they can have houses to live in, and these transitional houses can be places for people to transition into from a shelter to a permanent house.
Peter, you were about to say something a while back there, and do you remember what it was?
Actually, a couple of things came to mind, but one of them was just the reiteration of the need for safety and security. Abraham Maslow defines the hierarchy of needs that results in a fully actuated human being. And safety and security were the first two items on that hierarchy of needs that had to be met before anything wow. else could be accomplished. That's what we're working toward here.
Yeah, and you know, Christopher, there is a school of tiny house construction, and that is the Community Boat Project. Not to be confused with the Community Build Project, but the Community Boat Project out in Port Hadlock have been building for several years now tiny houses for people in need to host on properties. They have interns that come and build the tiny houses, and they built one of our tiny houses at their factory with interns. They're a great resource if people should recognize them.
The nuts and bolts of putting in a village or actually placing a house, some practical considerations, sewer and utilities, and how does all of that happen if you are fortunate enough to designate a spot where you can put in a village or you can find a spot to put in a tiny house? What are the requirements and what are some of the hurdles that you have to get over to make that happen?
You have to satisfy the local code requirements. The city of Port Townsend has a temporary use permit for a temporary home encampment. And we are working close with the county, and the county sees the need for this and to support this. So they're setting the ground for this to happen concurrently with the build. But, you know, maybe this village will stay, maybe it will be moved somewhere else. And that's the idea of the tiny house village, that it can move from place to place and serve a multitude of needs.
The church is sitting on a lot of property, and we would like to see it developed, but that won't happen until we get a sewer in Port Hadlock. We have so much space out there, and I can envision some permanent houses. There's been other Methodist churches in the Washington State area that have had Habitat for Humanity build a house, and then the church has deeded the property to Habitat so people actually have their own house. And I can see that out of Community United Methodist Church because we have so much land out there. But septic is one of the big expenses. But if you had a sewer, it's just limitless what we could do in the Port Hadlock area.
Gary, do you want to tell the story of this sanitation unit you just acquired? I'd like to hear that story.
One of our staff just scoured the country for a combination shower and toilet trailer. We were getting a lot of different quotes, and some of them are as much as $100,000. Well, that was out of our budget. So we kept looking and looking, and she finally found this relatively new unit, which, by the way, is parked at the old alcohol plant today. And we bought it out of Indiana from a brokerage firm that specialized in building these and selling them. So it's a great addition to the village. It's portable. We can move it wherever we need. And it has all the necessary pieces that go towards making this facility a success.
Have you ever looked into contacting maybe some of the contractors that work in the entertainment industry, what they call honey wagons? They're always on the set. Perhaps if they're maybe refurbishing their stock, maybe it's sort of like buying used rental cars.
Yeah, right.
You know, so it might be something to look into.
Yeah, well, if people have connections like that, if they have ideas, they should get a hold of us.
If someone wanted to get involved and someone wanted to find out more, where would they go and how would they do it?
They can certainly go out to the Methodist Church in Port Hadlock and view it firsthand and see what this team has done to accomplish what they have. And if they want to donate, they can go to the Bayside website, and there's a button there for community build, and they can donate whatever they are able to do, which would be very helpful, not only for this project, but we're going to keep this going. I think with the donations we have so far, we'll be able to have some money left to start the new one. So it's going to be an ongoing effort, and we'll just keep it rolling.
Yeah, so that's baysidehousing.org, to clarify. That's the website. And we also have a Facebook page, so if somebody wants to look us up on Facebook, it's Community Build Jefferson County. We have some images of the houses in production.
I'm going to ask for maybe some famous last words here. Todd Armstrong.
I'm so thrilled about the opportunity to be able to orchestrate this effort in terms of the building of the site and the building of the shelters, the cottages. And as Gary said, game on. Let's keep this ball rolling.
Peter Bunyan.
I'm really happy that I was able to help get this off the ground. It was a very important thing for me to be able to do. And I'm really happy to see the progress that is being made by the folks who have come after me.
Judy Alexander.
Well, anybody that knows me know that my passion is bringing groups of people together in the community for various reasons. And this is a new one for me. I've never gotten involved in tiny home building before, but it's definitely sparked my inspired enthusiasm. And I want to inspire other people to check it out because it is truly fun. It's just a feel good project, I have to say.
Randy Welly.
As a contractor with Blue Heron Construction, I really love the process of leading teams and of teaching volunteers. It's so rewarding. I'm hooked on it.
Gary Keister.
Well, it truly shows what a community can do when they're brought together for a purpose such as this. And I think, as we've stated before, this is just the start. We hope we can bring a lot more of the community, not only to work or to donate, but to be a part of the effort and to be informed about the need we have for housing in our community.
Jesse Thomas.
Yeah, I just want to thank and I want to recognize everybody here and the like 1,000 hours that people are putting in this project, putting the rest of their lives on hold to do this. It's dedication, it's inspirational, and that kind of dedication is spreading to the community, and it's a pandemic of hope.
It's Scott Rosecrans.
We have an acronym at our church for our mission effort. It's called SODS, S-O-D-S. Somebody ought to do something. Be that somebody. So what you have here is a group of somebodies who not only want to do something, but they are doing something. And I'm just glad to be part of the group.
The Community Build Project. Keep that in mind, folks, especially on Christmas.
Thank you for having us, Chris.
Thanks, Chris. Amen.
Thank you.
There has its always fly.
This week's Compass was written and produced by Chris Bricker. The Compass airs Saturday at noon and repeats the following Monday at noon and 5 p.m. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream live 24 hours a day. Executive producer for Compass is Steve Evans. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, this is Chris Bricker.